I'm Lisa Blair, scholar, writer, and international women's consultant.
And I'm David Bedrick, teacher, author, and founder of the Santa Fe Institute for Shame-Based Studies.
Join us as we break down relationships,
drawing from depth psychology, our work with clients,
and 18 years together in romantic partnership,
diving into the agony
and the ecstasy
of emotional intimacy, conflict, and connection. Let's jump in.
This is In Too Deep. Hey, David. Hey, everyone.
Hey, Lisa. Been a minute, as they say.
It's been a minute. It has been a minute.
Where does that idea come from? A minute. That means a long time.
Means,
I don't understand.
It means a long time. Yeah. That's some cool phrase.
What the hell have you been doing? Why aren't you doing more episodes?
Oh,
that's what I want to know.
That's what I want to know. We have gone through a pretty major life transition. We're still transitioning, but it's been a lot. We have moved. We moved from Santa Fe, New Mexico to Santa Barbara, California in mid-June. And wow, it's been quite an adjustment, quite a disorienting experience.
Somebody in my head that I'm projecting onto people thinks, oh, wow, that should be great. You're living this nicer life. And it's true. It's magnificent.
Yes.
In its beauty and where we are in our new home and all those things. But then some part of me thinks, present the face of the one who's like lucky and privileged and's got all these things, because that's true. That's true.
Right.
But then the outer transition initiated our inner transitions and letting go of old roles and styles in ourselves and with each other. And like all change, there's some medicine in doing that that's required. And that means you have to experience a little bit of uncomfort and pain and things like that to make a psychological transition.
Yes. Yeah. It's been a lot of reorientation for each of us individually and together in our relationship. And I'm finally, my DNA, I like to say, well, as an HSP, my transitions are particularly challenging. And there's a sense that it's as if my DNA, my cells, have to like take a while to get from there to here and reconstellate in my body. That's somehow how it feels. But I'm almost all the way here now, so.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Before we die, we should arrive.
That.
You know, on the planet, you know.
That's a good idea.
That's like not an easy thing to do. Little bits at a time. It's like, arrive here on this planet with a body that does stuff, relationships that do things, fires and climates that do things, and social issues that do things, and oh my gosh.
It's not always a fun place to want to arrive
I know,
in, you know.
There's some abundance and beauty, but let's face it.
Yeah.
There's some funky shit,
yeah, that's right.
You know, going down. If you're missing that, like I sometimes wonder, if you miss the difficulties, do you also miss your calling? Anyway, I know that's another topic, you know? Sorry, that was not what we planned to talk about.
I'm reeling you back, David.
Take it back in. Let me just say a few words about that 20 minutes later.
Come on back here.
Okay.
So today we are going to talk about this would fall under the general topic of patterns in relationship and patterns, I would say, that no longer serve the individuals and or the relationship. And we're going to focus specifically on one particular pattern. And let me see if I can start to frame that for us. So we've noticed this in our relationship and thought it's probably common among many relationships that there's a kind of default setting, like an unconscious setting, where we'll look to each other, we'll start talking to each other about whatever is going on in my life. I talk about work, talk about whatever, my inner life, something that happened, et cetera, et cetera. And kind of unconsciously put you in the role of listener, for sure, potentially champion of me, like, hey, I need a boost and I know you're going to be that for me, or caretaker, where I need comfort, I need care, TLC, compassion, sympathy, something like that for suffering. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of, there could be more than that, but those are sort of the main ones, definitely listener and then champion or caretaker. And it sets up a dynamic in a relationship when that's happening on either side or both sides, because it forces the other person to be in that role. And then it forces a dynamic that doesn't allow other aspects of the relationship to flourish. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are, first, how difficult it is to shift a central pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it makes sense to do something different, the bonds that hold old patterns or conventional patterns, the ones that we're used to, are usually strong. And this would be too far to go in the moment, but I think they're also bonds of trauma. Some people call that trauma bonding.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, I come into a relationship, this relationship, people come into relationship with their current sense of themselves. And that means that there are wounds that are not fully healed for everybody. I don't think I'll die having fully healed anything. So I'm not thinking, oh, heal your wounds before you enter relationship.
Sure.
But then those wounds present themselves, especially if I'm unconscious about them, present themselves to you. And if you're a caring person, then you're going to want to bring some love and healing to those.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm a caring person, I'm going to do the same. So we fulfill a certain function then out of our good-heartedness, our compassion-heartedness, our hunger to heal and bring love to another. So I think that's just part of the glue underneath that says, keep doing that.
Mm, that makes a lot of sense. Yes. I'm glad you bring that up. The sense of what we come into the relationship with. We come in with, you could say, unconscious needs.
Yeah.
We're dreaming of a figure on the other side who will address those needs.
Yeah.
Who will be there for us in the way that we most desire. But mostly that's happening under everyone's radar.
Mm-hmm.
So then I come in with a certain need for compassion, sympathy, understanding, caring, for example, that's common for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you feel that. And I'm just thinking, a quick divergent, it's like I'm thinking of codependency in a way. Like if I,
yeah.
It's a way of framing the term codependency. If I do this for you, if I am the figure that you're most needing, will you do it for me? Will you be the figure I'm most needing? And if we do that together, if we give that to one another, then that's a pretty as you say, a strong bond that then we can go for a whole lifetime doing just that.
Yeah.
Right? And that's lovely and beautiful. And it's limiting to what else we can do together.
Yeah. I think, I'm not sure if I should put this on New Age, but it makes me think of New Age. So forgive me for being not using that term wisely. But there's like a New Age idea that I'm looking for a relationship with somebody who can really be there, be emotionally present, be a collaborator in our growth and development. So you're working on yourself, and I want a person who's working on themselves and who's going to work on themselves with me and who's going to get into my deep psychology, and I'm going to get into theirs. And we can do that in such a way that we start to become or hope the other would become kind of healers for each other.
Yeah.
As opposed to a pot where we heal because of the heat of that pot.
Mm-hmm.
But we could become healers for each other like therapists. Well, you and I are both therapists, so that would be easy for us to
do. Right, right.
And sometimes we do that, right?
Right. And sometimes we do that intentionally. Say, hey, can I get your focus for a bit on this issue? But we're talking about when it happens on the fly unconsciously.
Yeah. I want to go back to what you're just saying, too. That issue of doing it intentionally or not, because it's an important shift. But going back to this earlier thing, so then if I'm dreaming, imagining, visioning somewhere not only fully conscious that you're going to be my healer,
mm-hmm.
and you're dreaming I'm going to be your mm-hmm. healer, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to grow together in that way. Then I think that's another way of framing what you're saying of these roles. I'm a healer for you. That means, for me, I'm going to be a compassionate, unshaming witness of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know sometimes my students say, or you say, I wish your students would know that you don't only treat me this way. Or sometimes my students say, it's not easy to do some of this unshaming when somebody hurts me, for instance. And I'm like, no. Like, this is not how I live my relationship. I don't sit there and say, I have to make sure I witness everything that Lisa does in a way that never brings shame to her. If I have that agenda, that's more of like I'm a therapeutic space. Sometimes we should do that intentionally, but that I can't be David. I can't be pissed off, and then you would get hurt by that. And it wouldn't be the ideal experience for me to be pissed off or to be frightened or whatever I am. It wouldn't be the ideal experience for you. And then we have to work that through.
Yes. Yeah. I just want to pause for just another moment on that because it's such a good point. Yeah, I'm going to sort of reiterate mm-hmm. what you just said, but in my own words. But there's an assumption that say in your, like you're saying, in your unshaming work, that then that's how we should be, certainly with our partner all the time and maybe with everybody, that we should have these attitudes. Mm. But actually, it's really, I mean, it's good to know how to do that. But then but the therapeutic healing container of that is where you're applying it.
Right.
It's a very specific container. Because the one who's doing the loving witnessing is, like you say, not bringing their whole self in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a equal relationship in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a relationship to create a space and container for the person who's receiving.
Right. I'm thinking about a number of things. One is, we've been talking about the pitfall of that way of being. I'm your healer, mm-hmm. therapist, and versus some other kind of relationship that includes other aspects of who we are brought in. But before I do that, one thing that you started to do some years ago with me, I'm not going to frame it exactly the way you said it, but you were more or less saying, if you come to me and want support, as opposed to me coming in with me and us having a dialogue and going wherever we go.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're saying to me, David, if your inherent, implicit request is for me to hold a space for you,
mm-hmm.
then ask for that specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can decide whether I'm going to do that. I can consent. And then I can hold space, which may mean that my own feelings and experiences and things I feel like saying and doing, I will marginalize temporarily to do that.
Yes.
So that if we do that, we do that consciously. And that's been a big thing for us, again, given our professions, that we sort of get used to being that kind of ear for people.
Right.
So if you say, oh, I'm having a hard day, I go into helping mode,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, or your body hurts, or I had a hard social media interaction today.
Right.
And then you're going to be like, oh, and you're going to start to hold that space.
Right.
So making that conscious is a really big deal. That was a really important intervention in making changes with each other. And we still work on that at times.
Mm-hmm.
Ask for that specifically. And if you can't ask for it, maybe you need to learn to, or maybe there's a disempowerment there.
Right. Right. Because otherwise it bleeds into the relationship without boundaries, without containment, right? And then it just kind of becomes a way of being.
Yeah.
Where either one of us can just come to the other one without thinking and just be like, hey, so this happened, da 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 da. Yes. And then we get put into that role of, okay, now am I your supporter? Am I here to support you? Should I put myself away? Should I not? There's no, consent, as you said.
And then the issue of power and empowerment comes up for me here, because if I am a holder and supporter of your life and space, my job is to make the best space for my wife to flourish. Mm-hmm. That's my conscious agenda. I would love to do that. Dr. Phil talks about, I remember one of the episodes I wrote about in Talking Back to Dr. Phil, he told some man, if you're not doing these certain things for your wife, you're not a good husband.
Right.
You
know? Right.
And he was like, "This is, you should be there for her in this way."
Right.
And I remember thinking, boy, that you sure shame that guy. He wasn't being like an abuser or something.
I can't remember
what, you know, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
But the problem is, let me speak what it's like for me.
Yeah.
If you're there mostly or exclusively to be my support, then I'm going to come to you with the things that are most difficult for me. The things that are most difficult, meaning I'm really suffering, I'm really scared, this is really hard for me, I'm getting wounded inside or outside, I feel like I'm not quite strong enough to deal with certain things. I'm needing support and cheerleading so I can do the next book.
Mm-hmm.
You are talking to a part of David that is, I hate using this word because it's overused, that's kind of like victim in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like using that word because I'm not thinking, don't be a victim. People shouldn't be victims. I think that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking to a part of me, let me say it better, that's more disempowered.
Mm-hmm.
He's not doing so well. He feels smaller relative to big forces that he's up against.
Yes.
I am small in parts up against forces that are really big relative to me. That is a truth. So I'm not putting that down. That is one of the truths of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the whole truth of my life.
Right.
Because the parts of me are quite powerful and not smaller than those big forces, up to those big forces, or bigger than some of those forces.
Absolutely.
So if I bring to you my smaller self, if I can say it that way,
mm-hmm.
and you sort of comfort me, support me, care about me, encourage me, then in a way you're continuing to talk to that person. In a way, that dynamic locks in this part of me that's smaller.
Yes.
And I start feeling like, oh, this is great. Whenever I feel small, I can go to Lisa and she makes me feel comforted. Well, that's a pretty lovely thing.
Yes.
The shadow of that.
Mm-hmm.
You want to say it?
No, go. No, go.
The shadow of that is that it unintentionally glues me more to that smaller self.
Yeah.
So I think I'm a person who can't handle much, but I have a great relationship that supports me a lot.
It makes me think of like Pavlov's dog, right? It's like, right? It's like...
you're pressing the button.
Like my paw here is pressing the button and getting a pellet or something, right? Nope. But throw it's like, it's really reinforcing to that small self.
Yeah.
That if I come to you with my suffering and get your wonderful, compassionate love, and I feel yummy and better, then I'm going to keep on doing it. Ooh, that felt good. That felt good. That felt good. And then I never actually get to live in other parts of myself that aren't suffering, that have other things, other agendas in life, have other interests in life, have empowerment, have capabilities, have strengths, have gifts. Those parts don't get to live because I'm constantly in the identity of my smaller self.
Right.
And then in addition, I never then get to grapple, get to wrestle with those experiences internally to work that out myself, which can very much be a path to empowerment, one path to empowerment, because I'm relying on you to serve that role for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I, in a sense, give my power, you could say, over to you. And then it's like we were talking earlier, this analogy could work. Like, if I come to you and say, "Oh, I'm struggling with this," you could be my aspirin in the moment, and that feels better in the moment. But then, say the underlying cause of whatever's causing me emotional pain and suffering is not addressed, and that's fine in certain instances, but not as the exclusive diet, right? Then I have to go back and say, what's happening inside? Let me try to wrestle with that so that I can find my way through and not just rely on you to pick me up. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Breaking that pattern then is not easy. But I'm thinking about how much this happens in the therapeutic space, because, well, you do some supervision with therapists, and I teach therapists and coaches. And one of the things I have to talk to my students about is the impulse as healers to witness a person's difficulties and suffering, to focus on that. To focus on the injured part of the person, because our hearts go out. Oh my gosh, that happened to you? Oh my gosh, that story, that abuse story, that's what your grandfather did. That's how you experience being a woman of color in the world. And all the pains that people bring to us.
Yeah.
If your heart is not moved by that, don't be a healer, you know?
Right.
It's like, oh my gosh, your heart can bleed. Compassion, empathy comes up.
Right.
But then again, then you're seeing the person in their pain and suffering, and they need that witness. They need somebody to say, holy shit, that's a real story. That's enormous. You went through freaking hell.
Yeah.
That's a thing that's going to take a while. That may be intergenerational. That's a huge thing. No wonder why you're having these difficulties.
Yes.
If I only see that, a suffering person who is wounded and injured and needs some kind of witnessing for that injury, if I only see that, then it happens in the therapeutic space, what we're talking about in relationship space. I'm not seeing a person who has gifts. I'm not seeing a person who has certain powers. I'm not seeing a person whose coping mechanisms have a lot of strength in them. I'm not seeing their angers and their fire as being able to break through certain things. And since I'm gluing them into the role of, I need your help, David. I need your help, David. I need your help, David, because I'm a hurting person. I'm not a different kind of person, a person who's powerful, a person who could resist, a person who doesn't really want your help, all those kinds of things. So I'm just thinking of how that patterning that can happen in the relationship thing also happens in the therapeutic space. And at a certain point, Arnie Mandela, one of our teachers, used to say, at a certain point, after a certain number of months, don't over, and he used the word mother. I don't think mothering would have to be the word, but that's how he first told me, don't overly mother people for too long, David, in the therapeutic experience. Don't hold them in that you're injured person place too long. Again, don't dismiss their pains and hurts. That the world does that too much. But then start seeing their capacities and their powers and their gifts and other things about them.
Yes.
So we don't glue them into a relationship where I'm hurt and I need help and you're hurt and I need help only.
Right.
I'm saying only, not to dismiss that.
Yeah. And it's an art as to how to do that with any given client.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of many times over the years when I was working with my therapist mentor, I would sometimes say, well, I've been feeling kind of depressed lately. And instead of working on the depression, as it were, she would often say, how's your artistic life going? How's your creative life going? Tell me about what you're up to there.
Yeah.
And I always found that really interesting. That, again, so rather than go work on the depression and sort of hanging out in that victim, what we're calling victim space, the small space, small self space, she would often take me into this other part, because when I was inspired, when I was being creative, the depression, the depressive down feelings magically disappeared. They're not there anymore, right? We talk about shape-shifting and such. It's because another part of me emerged. So again, that's just a kind of little example of of how you can mm-hmm. shift the person's narrative in a way yeah. from that's the problem I'm suffering to let's talk about mm-hmm. this and where you thrive yeah. more.
I remember Salome, I don't know if that was who you're yeah. talking about. I'm thinking of yeah. Salome, the who was a therapist and teacher,
yeah.
Friend for mm-hmm. ours for 17 years or something like that, yeah, but she died years, about yeah. a year ago.
Yeah.
So, but I remember once telling her, when she asked how I was doing, and I said, oh, Lisa has been really wrestling with migraines. That was many years ago, you were wrestling with migraines.
Yeah.
I don't know, semi-regularly, yes. how regular it was, but yeah. that was a thing.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, my sweetheart is suffering a lot. And Salome would say, yeah, Lisa is a really powerful, creative woman. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't dismissal. That's what she saw in the migraine.
Yes.
She meant, she didn't mean, don't, you know, just dismiss your migraine. She was like, that's what she saw, your migraine. She was like, there's these incredible powers that live in her that manifest in these energies inside
yes.
of her
yes.
head and eyes and sensitivities mm-hmm. and creativity that lives in her. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, right. You know, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. so then I had to remember when you had your migraines, mm-hmm. don't think, oh, poor you, you know, have my compassionate response, but then say, holy shit, man, she's got a lot of powers living in her. That's going to take a while to unfold, just like all of our powers, you know?
Right.
And
part of that is not just in how you would interact with me, but how you see me.
Yeah.
Right? Which is subtle distinction, but important. It's not just like, okay, how am I going to now relate to Lisa given she's got a migraine? Am I going to say, oh, sorry, sweetheart, what can I do for you? Or like, wow, you're powerful or something, right?
Right.
But your view, given that we're talking about a romantic partnership, not a therapeutic one where you hang out with this person, right?
Right.
Outside of that setting. But in a romantic partnership, then you're going to have a view of me, a narrative of me in your head, mm-hmm. like, oh, my wife mm-hmm. suffers a lot. She has a really hard time versus my wife's a powerful person.
Yeah.
Right. So that's an important mm-hmm. distinction.
Huge. And I'm thinking about associating this to, relationships where one party wrestles with chronic symptoms, chronic illness. I did a whole clinic, like a 3-hour clinic.
Yeah.
I did it without cost. I think it's cost like $30. Anybody who wants to get it, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But in that situation, then it's easy to start seeing the person as a person who's ill.
Sure.
Because, and they may be talking about that a lot, and they're experiencing that, and their energy is low, and the pains they're having,
yeah.
and whatever, the various different experiences, mm-hmm. symptomatic experiences they're having, mm-hmm. are so loud mm-hmm. and so ever-present
yes.
that we start seeing the person in that way, and then we're not seeing the depths and powers that live in them inside of that particular mm-hmm. symptomatic experience. And again, check out mm-hmm. that clinic thing. It's, you can see how that unfolds there,
yes.
the powers that live in those things. We're starting to see the person as a sick person.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're a sick person, right? You're sick. And it starts to be, you start to then glue yourself to a person who you treat as a ill person and not as a person who has a process living in them that they're experiencing, they're up against, just like all of us do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfolding and they're wrestling with big forces and mm-hmm. things like that. Every time I say these things, like, it's interesting. I'm so conditioned to be sensitive mm-hmm. that a part of me thinks I'm being insensitive in saying
sure.
that.
Like, yeah.
well, illness is really bad. People don't talk about the powers and these things. People are crippled by these things.
Right.
And that's a voice. And then I think, that's true. But if I could speak back, I'd say, yes, but that's not the totality of their being.
Right.
That's a damn important part. And there's so much denial and dismissal and shame that enters the chronic symptom area by not seeing people's pain and how difficult it is. And how difficult it is to single mother when you have immune issues. So
yeah.
there's all that has to be seen.
Right.
But then also shame enters if we don't see the powers that live in people and people get reduced. Anyway, so I just wanted
it's a really challenging mm-hmm. dynamic. I just want to note for listeners where they can get your access to that course. It's on davidbedrick.com, right? And
yeah.
then go to courses and then you'll see the course on what is it?
I think
chronic symptoms.
It may be called chronic illness, chronic symptoms.
Yeah.
Like I said, I can't remember what it is. I think it's like $35 or something for. I did it free for a while, and I was like,
Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember once working. Well, it's not one time; it's many times when I've worked with a person who is either chronically ill or has a partner who is.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the advice that I started giving was at some point, stop in your relationship. Stop talking about yourself as a person who's ill. I can't do that because I don't feel good. I don't do that. Can't do that because I don't have the energy. I can't do that because my my legs are can't walk like that. I can't do that because my headaches are really bad, so I can't do those things. Stop talking about it as if your body is stopping you from being you. And start talking about it as, I'm not really so into that. That doesn't work for me. This is not so good for me to do that kind of thing. I don't enjoy that as much as I used to, those activities. Because, can you hear the difference? In the first one, I can't go on that hike because I have a headache. Okay, that's true, it's sometimes imperfect.
Right.
But if that becomes the chronic kind of dialogue,
right,
as opposed to, I don't really enjoy hiking. The second one has a certain agency and empowerment in it and the ownership of the experience of that life that allows an intimacy. Otherwise, we're talking about my illness as if the illness is me. Is me, and then there's my illness. I can't do it because my illness is stopping me.
Well, you're saying we're talking about the illness as if it's not me.
No, thank you. That's right.
Yeah. The illness is what we call a third party. The illness is another thing. I'm not identified with it. It's my illness.
Right.
It's my symptoms that are preventing me from doing that. I'm a victim to those.
Yes. Right. And then you can't sort of say, this is who I am.
Right.
It's going to be chronic. You know,
right?
For a while, fine. But if it's going to be chronic, like going to live for years in this kind of thing,
yeah,
then there's a benefit to the person with the chronic symptoms and the other person. The benefit to the person with the chronic symptoms is they start to feel their own agency. I have to stand for liking things, doing things, having the amount of energy I have, and not. And now I have a sort of sense of my boundaries. This is what I can't do. This is what I don't like, as opposed to, it's not really me. It's my illness.
Okay. But I want to, consciously sort of take the other side, if you will, just so we can have a dialogue about that. Cause it's a provocative point that you're making. So what about the fact that for somebody who, it could be me, but for somebody who's got a body symptom or symptoms, that then, so say we want to go on a hike and I say, my back hurts and my back hurts today. I can't do that. And that's a common thing, let's say. Then I'm identified with really wanting to go on that hike. I really want to do that with you. I'm lamenting the fact that I can't do that with you as much as I used to, let's say. And that's sad for me, et cetera. I want to go, but I can't because of the pain, let's say. So you're then asking me, you're the person in this role, you're asking them to identify with not wanting to go, but they are identified with wanting to go. That's provocative / difficult. That's really challenging what you're suggesting. I understand what you're suggesting, but it's challenging nonetheless.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that?
Yeah, it's really challenging. It's in that moment for that person, there's a relational development and an internal relationship development. The internal relationship is, I want to do something, my body says no. It's funny, I'm looking at a book title. Our microphone is sitting on a title by Gabor Mate called When the Body Says No. I wasn't that amazing, right?
Right.
And he says that's like one of the things people was common for the people that he worked with who had a certain amount of
chronic
PTSD,
and
chronic illness.
Chronic illness, yeah.
He's like,
right.
They usually have a body that says no, that the person can't integrate, speak for.
They don't have the permission inside to say no, to make boundaries.
So in some way, some party who says, I want, and some party who says, no.
Correct.
Then the personal development is to start, in my view, connecting with the part of you that doesn't go forward, that mm-hmm. doesn't want to, that's not right for, that wants to do something else, that wants to rest, that wants to read a book, whatever it is, mm-hmm. that has a different agenda, mm-hmm. or wants to go not deal with the relationship in a certain way, or I don't know what, all kinds of different things. One has to go into that experience, that body thing, and say, what if I could channel my body, mm-hmm. what would it say? Mm-hmm. And again, we have to talk about how to do that mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. a way that's meaningful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm very sympathetic with what your side of the argument in a way, because it's so radical mm-hmm. to not feel victim to the body's sufferings.
Yes.
Victim to, again, not using that term victim like in like, don't be a victim, but meaning I'm a small person relative to the size and the power of my body experience, which can stop me dead. I remember I talked about the vertigo before.
Yeah.
Zoom, that's it, David. You're spinning. You're in the hospital for 2 days. Yeah. You can't do shit.
Right.
So I'm pretty subject to my body at that moment, right? Yeah, other moments, certainly. But that was it. 2 days and I can't do anything but lay in bed.
Yeah, and that's real.
And that's real.
Yeah.
So that's a real experience. And then we need a whole new paradigm. I call it an unshaming paradigm. Mm-hmm. Mandel called that a dream body mm-hmm. paradigm, mm-hmm. that the body was dreaming and expressing mm-hmm. intelligence. Mm-hmm. Some people talk about somatic experience. They're mm-hmm. looking for the intelligence in the body.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, chronic illness is a somatic experience. Yes. We don't always think of it that way. We think of these more subtle emotional energies.
Right, right.
Like illness, what people call illness. So how do we connect with those and start speaking for those? Mm-hmm. And then you get a benefit. The benefit is you get to say, I can't do that. Whoa. Mm-hmm. You're setting a boundary. You're used to overriding that boundary, that need mm-hmm. for a boundary. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to practice boundaries because your body is going to say no a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Now you're going to practice boundaries. Now you're going to feel the agency. Now conflicts are going to come up. Mm-hmm. You're not going to meet my expectations. You're going to have to figure out how to deal with the conflict. Mm-hmm. So now other things begin to happen mm-hmm. in the relationship mm-hmm. that have intimacy potential. Mm-hmm. Because you're not going along with the status quo of how we do things.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Or how your normal self would usually do things. And you're having to do other kinds of things and bring in other aspects of yourself.
Yes.
As you deepen your connection with those illnesses mm-hmm. and that experience.
Really well said. Really well said. It's like, in a way, the saying no, the body is, in the examples we're using, like the body is saying no, say to the hike. Right.
Yeah.
And that's in, was it Robert Bly, who talked about In the Shadow Bag?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like the saying no is in the shadow bag. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's in, meaning the person's identification with saying no to the hike mm-hmm. in this example is in the shadow. Mm-hmm. So, and probably saying no to other things is in the shadow in that relationship for that Definitely. Person, right? So they're not bringing that in mm-hmm. probably more regularly than just the hike.
Yep.
And so what we're talking about mm-hmm. is certainly under the umbrella of shadow work.
Yeah.
We're talking about beginning to become aware of and begin to quote unquote own and integrate aspects of one's unconscious, of one's shadow, mm-hmm. of other parts of oneself that we mm-hmm. don't identify with, yeah. but are happening. And the body does that a lot somehow. Yeah, yeah. We're down on the body trail here. Yeah. But so let's kind of bring this back for listeners to our original focus of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Imagine.
Yeah.
Let's imagine this dialogue. Mm-hmm. You and I are sitting here, we're across from each other, right? You're looking at me, I'm looking at you, mm-hmm. right? Let's imagine next to you is another Lisa, mm-hmm. the shadow Lisa. Mm-hmm. Let's imagine next to David is the shadow David.
Yes.
Okay, so there's four people. Two of us are visible, everyone sees us,
yeah.
right? And if I did theater, I'd put another person next to you, right?
Yes, yeah,
whatever, that's great. And that would be Lisa 2, Shadow
yes.
Lisa. And
yes.
And there's actually four of us here, right?
Right, right.
And then there's the dominant paradigm. Oh, you can't do this. You're not feeling
yeah.
this. You have a headache. How are you having this? That's what happened. Or
I can't go on the hike, David. Yeah. My back hurts.
Or, oh my gosh, yeah. that sounds like a really difficult interaction on social media.
Yes.
Are you dealing with okay? That sounds like that would be really hard.
Right.
That's our dominant paradigm.
Yes.
Right? Those two people hang out.
Yes. Giving each other support.
That's right. Now the shadow Lisa.
Yes.
right?
Yeah.
And she's thinking, what would she be thinking? Shadow Lisa, if I was like, oh, I got to tell you about this social media thing that happened. It was so painful for me.
Okay. This is great. I've got a big smile on my face. I'm like, ooh, this is fun. So Shadow Lisa is like, David, in this moment, you have no idea how big you are. Mm. You know exactly how to deal with this social media moment. You have so much more awareness than this person on the other side. What would your most free self, strongest, not afraid to be powerful self do or say?
That's great.
Something like that.
Now, if I stayed in this role, I'm ignoring Shadow David, my power, I'd say, I really need your support. This is really hard for me. Right? I'm insisting on the dynamic that we're talking about, right?
Their that roles, I care for your feelings.
You care for my feelings, and you'd be sensitive to my feelings. And that's, by the way, I married you, by the way. I wouldn't say that, right? You know?
And
let me give you a guilt trip about it, you know?
And we'd stay in what I'm now calling the gossip channel, which is like, we're going to gossip together about this annoying person on social media and be like, yeah, they are a jerk. And yeah,
right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Right. So if you say that, but I'm really suffering. What would I say? Yeah. Oh, this is tough. Let me think.
What does Shadow Lisa do?
Shadow Lisa. okay. In this moment, I would say, what do you need from me? Do you need us to make a space for you to think through what's happened? Do you need my support? What are you needing? So I wouldn't, Shadow Lisa would not just fold into, again, the sort of support person role. I would like sort of, in a way, put it back on you a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that brings out a Shadow David part.
Uh-huh.
Because I already feel confronted a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little bit more fierce. And I'm a little bit more, like, challenged by you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it brings up a little bit more oomph in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I need that.
Mm-hmm.
That is also maybe even more important medicine for me to feel, you're putting me on the spot. Can you hear my tone?
Yeah.
Hear your tone changing. What are you needing from me?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're putting me on the spot. Now this energy, you're putting me on the spot. I have to think about that. Maybe I don't need anything right now. I'm going to go sit with myself. I'm a little bit grumpy and moody in that tone.
Yeah.
And right.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, ugh, I don't like that particular tone. Whoa. She's waking me up.
Uh-huh.
She says, get out of that sense of your small self.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to treat you differently. I'm not going to treat you like you're having that problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to treat you like you're capable of having a very important dialogue and connection, and I'm going to treat you this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm going to interact with you that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of that is that energy that you call up in me, that's what I need to deal with the social media problem anyway.
Right.
I don't need more of that other stuff. I may at times. Again, we're not saying never comfort a person who's
absolutely
suffering.
Absolutely,
everybody should know that, we lean into that. But we're saying, now, not only do I get this thing about the social media, but I get a more intimate moment. You're showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have to show up. And it's not only pleasant, this particular moment.
Right.
Right? It can get better. But now we're like, oh yeah, there's a kind of there's a kind of a respect between us.
Right.
That starts showing up, and an energetic between us that has more heat.
Mm-hmm,
to
mm-hmm,
it,
mm-hmm.
And a little less of what we could call mothering or something.
Caretaking.
Yeah, caretaking.
Yeah.
What kind of parent it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But people will get the idea. You're inviting me into something in something else. And somebody would call that insensitive. I would call that a more intimate moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we could keep going. If it was still hard for me, I could say that feels really painful and whatever. And we could go back and forth, and we'd have to find ourselves now.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We'd have to. Mm-hmm. And now the social media problem goes away.
Mm-hmm.
It's the problem between you and I in this difficult moment that's
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think I want to just put a touch of context around it for listeners. You and I have had many conversations about this kind of these kinds of dynamics in our relationship.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be saying something like that out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we've talked about these kinds of things. So if I were to, in a moment, say, what are you needing from me right now? Mm-hmm. You would know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You would know what I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. You would know, oh, she's just bringing in some awareness about the dynamic between us where I'm asking her to be a certain kind of support person. And right. So that's not just like left field. So so it's not insensitive in that way, right? There's a sensitivity in this because we've created conversation about that. Just to say for listeners.
And then the last point I want to make around the whole issue is breaking that pattern, breaking all patterns, breaking that pattern means a little bit of insensitivity and conflict.
True.
Insensitivity to the earlier pattern.
Right.
Insensitivity to the people who liked that pattern, right? To the people who were getting off on that pattern, the people who were married to that pattern.
Yes.
It's a little betrayal
of
how we agreed to be, even if we never made it conscious.
Yes.
It's a little bit of a conflict. You're challenging me to say something. It's a little bit of a conflict now.
Right.
There's a tension between us.
Right.
So I think that's the part, last thing I want to say about that breaking those roles is that it's a little bit of a challenge, an insensitivity, a conflict with an earlier pattern for us to develop newer patterns. That's the bumpy part
of
I'm not going to go along with this particular pattern and role anymore, even though this was not an abusive pattern. This is like a caring pattern we're talking about.
Yes.
We're not talking about, I'm not going to go along with being abused or anything. We're talking about breaking other kinds of patterns.
Love that conversation. This is great.
Yeah.
We got to close up.
The sun is shining. The ocean is calling me.
Yes.
Time for a walk. I'd love to hang out with everybody forever. But screw everybody. Get over it. I'm not here for you that way. Sorry.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye.
If you liked this episode or learned something new, we would love if you would spread the love on social media and tell a friend about our podcast. As you know, word of mouth is everything. And if you really want to put a smile on our faces, subscribe to our podcast so you can be sure to receive all our future episodes. And while you're at it, write us a review on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. To learn more, visit intodeep.com. That's intowodeep.com. Music is An Orange Groove by Rafael Pistachio. In Too Deep is a Belly Song Press production.